and thank you for tuning in to the Sweet Tooth Vegan Podcast. I'm your host, Shalina, and you are listening to my new series called Mind Your Business. This series features entrepreneurs within the vegan community who share their insights on how to start and build your own brand. They do this by drawing on their personal experiences. In part one of this series, I had the pleasure of meeting and chatting with Rainbow and Adam of Brown Sugar. And for one, they are my first Canadian guests, which I'm so happy about. Finally getting some vegan love from my fellow Canadians. Yes, yes. And this is also my first episode where I sat down in person with my guests. Adam and Rainbow, they invited me to their home, and they were so gracious. Not only can they bake, but they threw it down in the kitchen. They made roasted sweet potato, asparagus, and curried lentils, and it was so delicious and filling too. I was definitely thankful and inspired by their hospitality. So, without further ado, here is part one of the Mind Your Business series, Brown Sugar.
So, August 11th, we launched Brown Sugar at Vegandale Food and Drink Festival in Toronto, and we were really happy with the results. We knew we had good recipes, but we had no idea that we'd sell out both Saturday and Sunday, that people would ask us for custom birthday cakes, for wholesale orders for their offices, and people were handing out business cards, telling their friends, leaving reviews, and the best part is when you see people licking their fingers off of that last bite, and they turn to the nearest stranger and they go, "You have to try the cinnamon rolls." And so really the only difficult part for us was staying up 2 days in a row, getting next to no sleep, just to make sure everything's fresh for the next morning. But it was completely worth it, because as soon as we got there, we just fed off all the energy of the vegan people. And vegan people, I don't know if you noticed, are generally pretty friendly and pretty happy. But when they have a lot of food options, it's like a whole other level. They're a lot of fun to be around, and it was a lot of fun for us to do and to hang out and talk with them. But what we're most proud of is the fact that we're starting to build an intellectual community. Or perhaps we're just tapping into the intellectual vegan community, because yes, at the end of the day, we are teaching majority African history. However, it's not just Africans that are interested. Everybody was interested. So that lets me know that people are interested in getting to know other people's cultures. And that's important, because when you do that, you can better relate to someone. And when you can better relate to someone, you can befriend them. And when you befriend them, you can possibly even positively influence that person. Right. And we're not here to be a cookie company. At the end of the day, we're here to influence society. We want to influence the way society sees Black people, but far more importantly, the way Black people see themselves. And we're really happy that we can do it through this vehicle called Brown Sugar.
Right. Yeah, it's awesome that you had such a great turnout and people enjoyed your treats. And when I first came across Brown Sugar, I thought it was just a baking company, but you were saying that it's more than that. So can you please expand?
Well, we like to say that Brown Sugar is an educational company, and we're here to honor African heroes through our delectable gluten-free and vegan treats. And so with every treat named after one of our heroes, we tend to stimulate meaningful and intelligent discussion about our past while creating solutions for our future. So our end game in mind is to do whatever we can to uplift society and, of course, uplift our people. And it starts with education, because education can turn into love of self. And love of self can turn into you doing things for yourself that you haven't done before and learning new skills and becoming a different person and growing. And then once you've grown into a new person, now you can reach down and grab up the next person and show them, hey, this is the way I did it. This is the way you can do it too. And maybe you don't want to do it this way, there's someone else that you can learn from. So Brown Sugar is very important for us because we want to start off with education, but then we want to uplift Black people with it. I want this to get Black people to become politically aware. I want this to get Black people to start caring about their health. I want this to get Black people to start looking at each other as brother and sister, instead of just, oh, I'm from Ghana, you're from Nigeria, you're from Ethiopia. It's like, no. No one can, for the most part, especially non-Black people, cannot tell the difference between different kinds of Black people. To them, it's just you're Black. Mm-hmm. So you don't catch hell because you're Nigerian or you're from Ghana or if you're Egyptian. It's because you're Black. It's because of the dark skin. It's because of the kinky hair. It's because of the melanin. Mm-hmm. So we need to come together, and I see that brown sugar is probably the best way for us to do it, because I'm not highlighting just East African or just West African or just African American heroes. It's anybody that looks like us, that stands up for us, and then also just happens to stand up for the rest of society, because they go, hey, if we happen to be at the bottom here and we get uplifted, the rest of society gets uplifted.
Right.
That's what I love about brown sugar. We're starting it with education, but we mean so much more to come out of it. And mm-hmm. we know so much more will, because we already have plans for it. And definitely for us, that starts with a storefront next year. We'd love to have a storefront.
Wow,
hopefully
awesome.
By the end of like festival season generally runs, you know, April to September. Hopefully September, October, around that time. Because we know one of those important things for Black people is, hey, have a safe space where you can come and share ideas.
Right.
Where you can come feel good about yourself and look around the walls and look around the room and see people who look like you and go, okay, I like looking like this. I like being like this. I like having this history.
Right.
And I feel like once that happens, we'll have a new walk, we'll have a new talk, we'll have a different swagger about ourselves. So brown sugar is the start. Reading, education, and learning about your history is the start. And then it just takes off from there.
Right.
Because now I'm happy that I start to learn about my history, my education, because I feel like a different person.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. Very creative take on like taking cookies, baked goods, and then using that to reach out to people, to educate people. I think that's really creative.
And that just happened naturally. We just merged two things that we were kind of learning, just how to make our own recipes and then learning about our own history and our own culture. And we just merged the two together and brown sugar was conceived. So
yeah.
Nice.
It was cool because it's important as a couple to do things together. And one of the things that we like to do together the most is be in the kitchen, and especially baking too. So it was funny because I already, before I went vegan, had a sweet potato pie recipe. And then when I met her, because her aunties are all Jamaican, they have their apple cakes and their black cakes and whatnot. And then we got together one time when I went to go visit her at school, and we made chocolate chip oatmeal cookies. And then one day we were here in this apartment that we shared now, and she made cinnamon rolls. I said, okay, we need to do something about this because this is too good. And it was only her first time too.
Yeah.
I said, if she can get better from this,
nice.
We can actually turn this into something.
Yes.
And so it was definitely born out of our love for baking and our love for learning about ourselves. Because the more you learn about yourself, the more you love yourself.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many great things that Black people have done for themselves. You look back and you go, wow, that's my legacy. I got to live up to that, right?
Right.
But that's the problem. When you don't know your history, you have nothing to live up to. You're not ashamed, and you're not ashaming anyone, and you're not disrespecting anyone or any family name, because you have no ties, you have no connection. You feel like, what does it matter? It's just me in the world. But I don't know about you guys, since I was born, I've always felt like people are looking at me because I'm Black and I have to represent all Black people. So I felt like, okay, I have to do a good job and everything. And I feel like as soon as Black people have someone to impress and someone to look up to, just like when you have an older brother or a father or a mother that you really want to impress,
mm-hmm.
you start to do a good job, you feel motivated, right?
Right.
But some of us, I feel like we don't have a mother or father. We don't have our history of our past, so we don't feel the importance to do well and do right by ourselves and help other Black people, and then just help people in general too. It doesn't have to just be Black people.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing is building that community so that we have each other to hold each other accountable to, that we have each other to look up to and to admire and to lift up one another. Instead of having other people to aspire to, we have each other to aspire
right,
to.
Right. Yeah. Adam, you were talking about like the importance of knowing where you're coming from. To have a sense of pride, you get that from knowing your history and knowing who you are. And for me, like my background is Jamaican, and I didn't know much about the history of Jamaica until I went to university in second year of university, when I took a Caribbean course, Introduction to the Caribbean. And that's when I learned that the Black people from Jamaica are actually from West Africa and were brought there on slave ships as well. And like growing up, I thought whenever we learned about Black History Month in school, I thought it was just the Blacks in America that came
mm-hmm.
from West Africa. So when I found that out not too long ago, it's like, wow, like I really need to learn more about my people. And it's just kind of sad that it took that long for me to...
It's not your fault, though.
Learn. Yeah. My mom was shocked, too.
Yeah.
She was shocked, too. She's like, oh, I didn't know the blacks in Jamaica are actually from Africa.
Yeah, we were at an event maybe a couple of weeks ago, and one black lady goes, Egypt's in Africa?
Oh, wow.
Because there was a chocolate chip there, she goes, in that location for my Africa cooking, she goes, what country would that be in? Like, I'd say that's Egypt. She goes, Egypt in Africa? I'm like, yeah. She's like, no, get out of here. And this is the black woman, right? And you're just like, wow. Wait a second. So it's not anyone's fault. It's the mm-hmm. fact that we all thought that traditional schooling was the best way to educate ourselves. And to some extent, it does do a great job of teaching you math and science and logic, but it doesn't teach you...
Knowledge and, yourself.
Yeah, and it doesn't teach you how to be confident. It doesn't teach you how to... But the main thing, it doesn't teach you black history.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else comes after once you learn black history. Love of self, confidence, wanting to learn more, the eagerness, the keenness. But it all starts with black history. And if you're not taught black history, then every time you flip the page in your textbook and you don't see someone who looks like you inventing something else, curing a new disease, you start to think, wait a second, anyone who's ever contributed to humanity was not myself or my family. They didn't look anything like me.
Mm.
And I think we don't realize, we subconsciously start to take that upon ourselves, like, we're not going to do anything big with our lives. I expect everyone else, and not just white people, but that's who you see majority in the textbook. You don't even mm-hmm. see Asian inventors or, like, Hispanic. No, it's just white only.
Mm-hmm.
So you start to think, okay, it's okay for white people to be very successful, be very wealthy, do right by themselves. And it's normal when you see a black person who...
is the opposite.
Yeah. So education is conditioning, and it can be conditioning towards education or conditioning towards, like, brainwashing. Like, is it positive or is it negative? One way or another, it'll be very effective, though, because it's being put in your brain every day, 6 hours a day.
Right.
You spend 6 hours a day on anything, you'll become very well-versed in it. Mm-hmm. But the problem is we're becoming very well-versed in someone else's history.
Mm-hmm.
So we can respect somebody else so much more than we can respect ourselves, because we know so much more about them than we know about ourselves.
Right. Yeah, that's why I'm glad you guys started this company, and I feel like it'll definitely change that. Yeah, it's so true. Like, even the history they teach us here in Canada and Canadian schools is not completely the true history of Canada, because they totally glance over Canada's first peoples too.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
they don't even... I feel like maybe nowadays in schools they're starting to become more truthful in sharing, because I have younger siblings. And I'm like, oh, wow, I didn't learn that about First Nations people till I went to university.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're learning it.
And so. I feel like they're only learning it because people are holding them accountable for the actions that they did so many years ago. You know, people, like, that pain has not been forgotten on the generations that exist now. And so also with our own history, like, it hurts sometimes when you see that they're making a more slave movie. You're like, what is the purpose and what is the motivation behind this? But it's so important for us to burn those images into our mind and don't forget, and to know, like, this, the strength of our people, and, like, this is where we came from, but our legacy is still unwritten. Like, everything is still there to be achieved.
Right.
And we have such a long way to go, but we've come such a far way too. It's impossible not to be proud of black people when you see, like, everything that we've endured as a people. It's impossible not to, when you see people on the street that look like you, you just want to hug them and you just want to love on them, because we've come such a far away.
Yeah. And I feel like, for me, that's... I know this is not true now, but, like, growing up, I thought that was the beginning. Slavery was the beginning. I didn't know about, like, how, like, in Europe, black people ruled Europe at one point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't know we had so much, like, technology and, like... science, like, we came up with so much technology, sciences, mathematics. Like, for me, because of all these slave movies, yes, they're important, but, like, growing up, that's all I thought we came from was, I thought that was the beginning of our history.
Yeah.
Was slavery.
Same thing for me too. I remember going to my elementary school library in maybe grade 2, I believe, or grade 1, and I wanted to learn about Martin Luther King. I just kept hearing the name. I didn't know who he was. And I found a book that had like this abstract, very brightly colored, sharp facial features and everything, sharp lines. It was this sort of cartoon, and it was outlining things, like experiences that he's had. And I remember reading it and going, oh man, this happened to black people? Like, even though they showed a cartoon, even the cartoon, when you show a dog sicking on someone's leg, that still looks horrendous, even in a cartoon. So me, age nine, watch, like, reading this, going, this happened? Like, I wanted to talk to somebody about him. I can't believe this happened. I'm telling my teacher, and she's like, yeah, this and this happened. It's true, Adam, blah, blah, blah. And in my head, I'm going, how come we don't learn about this? Mm-hmm. How come I stumbled upon his name and then had the curiosity to go check him out? Shouldn't it be that this is presented to me as an option of one of the things I can decide to become more curious on and more curious about? I'm not saying Black History has to be something everybody learns about, but if everybody has to learn about anyone's kind of history, any group, then all groups have to learn about all histories. Yeah. Either that, or let us pick which history you want to learn. Yeah. And to be honest, I'd rather every group learn about every history, because you'll see how similar it is, and then you'll no longer start separating yourself. Exactly. Oppression and suffering looks the same the world around. Mm. Whether you're talking about like India, Pakistan, or you're talking about Albania, Serbia, or you're talking about Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, what it doesn't matter. It all looks the same. And the same things happen to everyone. What happened to your mother and father happened to my mother and father, and grandmother and grandfather, and vice versa, and as far back as you can go. Mm-hmm. So it's important that you learn it so you can see it and go, you're just like me. We might look different, we might speak different, walk, talk, but hey, you're a lot like me. Because then I think that would remove a lot of the hate that people have. Because how can you hate someone that has such a similar shared experience as you? Exactly. And that's why, at the same token, you love people who have a similar shared experience as you. Right. It's not the black skin. It's the fact that black skin has provided you guys a certain experience. And I feel comfortable when I see Rainbow and Shay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So even if I didn't know your names, we haven't met before. I saw two of you guys walking down the street. I'm like, oh, who are those two cuties? I'm interested. I want to know. Like, I want to know, like...
Yeah.
Oh, are you guys students? Are you, like, what do you do? You guys work? Anytime I see a black person, I want to know about them, and I want to get to know them, because I know there has to be something interesting about them that they can teach me, right?
Yeah.
With everybody, I do that. But with black people, there's a certain curiosity, because I just realized now, at the age of 26, how come only now I'm curious about black people? You've been a black person for 26 years. It took you that long to start caring about your own history. Because you're so submerged in someone else's history, you forget about your own.
Yeah, I totally agree and relate to that. I'm 26 as well, 26 years, and I'm just starting to care and ask questions and dig. So you're not alone. Yeah. So you're talking about how through your treats you like to educate people on black history. So, I know some of your treats are named after heroes. So, yep. What are some of those heroes' stories?
Malcolm's Milk Chocolate Oatmeal Cookies. Those are the cookies that everybody loves and are starting to become notorious now because they're in the shape of Africa. The reason they're in the shape of Africa is because Malcolm promoted, especially towards the end of his life, Pan-Africanism. Getting African people across all continents to recognize that we're all one and we suffer the same. We struggle the same. Let's progress the same. Let's grow the same now. Let's grow together. Let's grow towards each other. Mm-hmm. And let's spend money with one another. Let's love one another. Let's look to each other to be our teachers and our healers. Why are we only looking to each other for frivolous things, for things that don't matter? Mm-hmm. The things that do matter, we should come together on. And I like Malcolm X a lot because it was his autobiography that made me want to become not just an amazing person. I always, when I grew up, I want to help the world. I don't want to just help the world now. I want to help the world. And I really want to help black people because I know, once again, you uplift black people, everyone else's quality of life goes up. Yeah. So definitely Malcolm's Milk Chocolate Oatmeal Cookies after my personal hero, Malcolm X. Rainbow, you can talk about Sojourner if you'd like.
So we have Sojourner Cinnamon Rolls, and that's named after Sojourner Truth. And she was an abolitionist in the late 18th century. She did a lot for women's rights, and she did a lot for black soldiers that were fighting in the Union Army at the time, just raising funds for them so that they, while they were fighting for their rights literally in this army, like they were still being oppressed upon as they were fighting on the land for the people that oppressed them. It was just absolutely wild to me anyways. But she was raising funds for them, and she also is notorious for her speech, Ain't I a Woman Too, which talks about women's rights. And she was just really amazing because she stood up for everybody, not just black people, but women and men, just to know that they're all recognized and we're all people. Mm-hmm. And that is the standard. We also have Angela's Apple Crumble as well, named after Miss Angela Davis. I'm currently going through her autobiography right now, but she was very involved in the civil rights movement during the late 60s. She was involved in the Black Panther movement as well. She was also a known communist, and so she was really into social justice for all people of color, and for poor whites as well, just to band together and to know that we are all suffering from the same oppression and we all need to work together into overcoming the situations that we're currently facing. And there was a lot of things happening in the 60s, like the Vietnam War and like the women's rights movement. So learning about that time is definitely very exciting to see how the tactics that people used to really get their message out there and to mobilize massive amounts of people.
Wow. Another one I'll add in, these are, I guess, our most popular treats that we're naming. Sankara sweet potato tarts, named after Thomas Sankara. He was the first independent president of Burkina Faso, and I believe he was killed within 6 or 9 months. Wow. Very shortly after he was elected, because he did everything in his power to keep colonial powers outside of Burkina Faso. He was very forward and telling people, whatever you need to eat, grow yourself. Why do we have imported millet, imported corn, imported rice? We can all grow this stuff here. He was for building your own houses, building your own shelter, growing your own food, equality of women and men. There was a famous interview I was watching where he was saying, how come it is when a young woman gets pregnant, she gets expelled from school? Shouldn't the male get expelled from school too? Or how about we both let them stay in school, since they're going to need that school even more now?
Exactly.
And also standing up for women and women's health services. Sexuality is a very taboo topic anywhere in Africa. So for him to speak about women's health services and letting them have more autonomy over the way they govern themselves, and not only that, giving them more respect and allowing them to have more leadership roles and not just be like homemakers or simple here and there jobs. No, you can work in government. You can be a soldier. You can do whatever job a man can do. In other words, as a person of this country, it's important for you to be useful and impactful in this country. It's not okay for you to just exist here. Mm. So once again, that instills pride within you. You can't just be amongst us and be like, yeah, my life's okay. I'm just taking care of myself. I'm just doing me, as a lot of black people like to say. Yes. No, there's no such thing as doing you. Doing you means you're not part of us anymore. If you're part of us, you got to do right by us.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons I really like Thomas Sankara.
And what year was like time for you to know?
I'm reading a lot lately. I believe it's late.
Like long ago?
Mid to late 80s, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, mid to late 80s. I was going to say like 86, something like that. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's an interesting point where he talks about growing your own food, building your own homes. Like here in North America, we can't do that because like everything's governed, you know. And even if you buy seeds like to grow, because like my grandparents, they grow tomatoes and bell peppers in the summer, it only lasts one summer. You can't, like, those seeds they give us, it doesn't last forever. Like, they don't regrow back. So I feel like they do something to the seeds where you have to go back and buy more seeds.
It's weird because we have tomato, that blue pot over there, San Marzano tomato plant. We have 2 ghost pepper plants down there. Okay. And we got them from a farmer friend of ours, and they showed some fruit. And I hope they come back again next year. But so far, they haven't died. So we're hoping that they're like, they're going to bring us more food, more health.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one thing I want to say also about Thomas Sankara. Mm-hmm. He had no possessions. Wow. He had a motorcycle and a guitar. And one of the first things he did when he got elected, stripped all elected officials of their Mercedes and their BMW leases and their fancy getaway vacations and their chauffeurs and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. He goes, you want it? We pay you a salary. Get it yourself. We're not taking the people's tax money and the money they pool in to give yourself a luxurious life when most of us here don't even eat.
Hmm. Wow.
So it's like he was the most, in my mind at least, after reading so much about him, he had the purest intentions for his country. He cared only about his country. Mm-hmm. Burkina Faso first, the rest of you later.
And he was so effective in the little time that he was there. Like, he made such a change in his country, even with like vaccinations and getting children into school, like numbers that the country had never seen before in literacy rates. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so if you can do that quickly, like, what's everyone else doing? Exactly. And that's why they had to take him out, because he was making everyone look very shameful in their intentions, for sure.
And actually, it's suspect the person who killed him was actually his best friend.
Yeah. No way.
Yeah. His best friend, who he was part of the military coup with, who he rose up with.
Oh, no.
And his friend apparently was a little jealous of his leadership and his...
And as soon as they moved him out, his friend became, like, president. And then he signed papers with colonial powers and
just everything. Reversing everything that Thomas Sankara fought for, basically.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah.
But it's awful. There still, like, remnants of, like, his work, even though his friend came into
over? I know there's at least a women's health center and at least a school. Or it's one of the two. But I know there's some buildings that are named after him. Okay. But it's funny because it's like, what about the person? The person should potentially, what was that, 80s? Should potentially still be alive in their late 70s, 80s, whatever, right? Why do we just have the one school? If that person ruled that country for even a year, if that's what you did in 6 months, imagine what you can do in a year, 2 years, 3 years. Even in Canada and North America, it's what, 4 years? Imagine what he would do in 4 years. He would get so much done, so... You look at people like him and you have to think, what do I do with my life? Do I just work an office job? Do I just take some money home for myself? Or do I try to do something outside? Do I volunteer with younger people? Do I help people start businesses? Do I teach people how to play music? Do I teach people how to get fit or get in shape? Do I do anything that benefits someone outside of myself so as to justify my existence on this planet? Mm-hmm. I'm not just here to consume. I'm here to give back. Mm-hmm. And that's what all those heroes represent, that idea. I'm here to give back. I'm not here for me. I can die tomorrow. I don't care. But the movement's going to continue because I started something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his people will never forget him. That's one thing. He will never be forgotten for what he's done. Like, we had no idea when we found him, just by looking at people who are Black and influential. And we found his name had popped up. So I think that he'll never disappear. His legacy mm-hmm. will live on through his people, for sure.
And you just telling me about him, informing me, it stretches out his legacy. Because mm-hmm. I've never heard about him before or this story. So, wow. It's incredible.
They are incredible people. Mm-hmm. And so you look at them and you look at us and you go, okay, can we do even a fraction of what they did? Can each of us do even a fraction of what they did? Because you cumulatively put it all together and you have something to work with. Yeah. You have a force. You have a movement.
Yeah, as you were talking, I was thinking those same questions, like, what? Can I do something like that? How?
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, for us it's brown sugar, and you'll find it your way too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, like, when people are supporting brown sugar, they're unconsciously supporting African education.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes me feel very good when all kinds of people that, all shapes and sizes, all walks of life, come to our booth. And they want to support it.
Right.
They like the cookies, but they don't realize you're supporting African education at the same time.
That's awesome.
Because now you're hanging around our booth, people are going, oh, what's that? And they walk up and they go, who's that? Oh, that's Julius Malema. And then we can get into a very detailed and, or just very light conversation, whatever, how I can gauge, you know, how interested the person is. Yeah.
What would you say was probably one of the most interesting questions or unexpected questions you've received from a customer?
I would say a lady came up to me and goes, is your cocoa fair trade? I said, wow, I never thought about that. Then I researched it and I said, oh my God, there's cocoa, I believe, in West Africa, and there are child slavery doing it, and Nestle's benefiting off of it, and it's in all the Halloween treats that everyone's eating right now and from last night. So
can you explain that? I don't
Cocoa
fair trade, what does that mean?
When they say fair trade, as far as I understand it, it's that people are like the farmers are represented and get fair amount for what they're giving. They're not getting ripped off where the company just says, okay, like the farmer has influence in how their product gets sold as opposed to just giving it to a company.
Okay.
So with fair trade stuff, the whole idea is when you see the stamp or you see that logo somewhere, you know, okay, more of the money, more of the profits, and more of their seed control or bean control, whatever it is that you're growing, stays within the farmers. They're not getting robbed by Monsanto or whatever. So people like supporting fair trade stuff more. And generally, fair trade, it's supposed to, I can't say for sure for every organization, it's supposed to mean there's some regulations over the labor, too, of the people who make it, too. So someone goes, do you have fair trade cocoa? In my head, I went, oh, God, now I have to think about everything else. But you know what? I'm glad she asked, because now I'm starting to think I should source my ingredients from Africa. That's our next step. That's one other thing that we want to do to really make this an African company and really benefit Black people. Yeah, I have no problem with, you know, going to wholesalers here in Toronto. But none of them are Black owned. And we have huge grocery bills as a bakery. Wouldn't it be nice to give it to someone that looks like us that will reinvest it back in our community?
Right. Wow. I haven't even thought of that either.
So is even just in Eritrea, like there's some of the treats that I have. Now I'm thinking to myself, now I have to go back and now I have to meet some people and not just go back and buy a bunch and then bring a few suitcases back. Like, no, I actually have a steady supplier there for certain ingredients, certain spices. And it's exciting to me because I'm like, oh, the possibilities. I could be traveling to Africa for business trips. Mm-hmm. I could be learning, experience, and earning at the same time. And that's where I think brown sugar could also be the model for other people. Not, at least in the food for sure, because like the food in Africa is so much better. I can give you an example. There's flaxseed in our freezer right now. That's mm-hmm. from Eritrea. The flaxseed that we get here is Chinese or whatever, wherever we get it from. It's like a very light brown color and it's very hard. The flaxseed they have there is slightly softer. And when you grind it up, it has this nice black color. It's very dark, dark brown. Mm. It smells as if it's coffee, as if it's already roasted. And the oil content, you can tell it's so much higher because the ground flaxseed here, it doesn't stick together. Because there's no oil or whatever. You ever notice when you're making a crust, you put coconut oil and things stick together? Because there's that oil content. With this stuff, it's clumped like truffles, like in balls. Wow. And it's because there's such high oil content. And because people don't know this, fruits and vegetables in different continents taste different and have different nutritional composition in different continents as well. I believe I read, even from time periods, today we have to eat 5 apples to get the same amount of vitamin C as there was in an apple, I think it was 40 or 50 years ago.
Oh, no.
So
what?
They're bigger, but they're not more nutritious.
Oh, no.
It's just like chicken breast, right?
Oh, wow.
And they do it the same way. They pump full of steroids and chemicals and all that sort of stuff. So,
5 apples to get the same vitamin C.
So I noticed just by looking at flaxseed, I'm like, how come this one's so tasty, so smelly, and aromatic, and good for you? And why is it different? It's grown differently, different sun, different, and it's grown for quality. It's not grown for mass. Mm-hmm. In North America, we get our stuff on mass. Right. And in Africa, yeah, they do produce stuff on mass, but you can find stuff from local villages, from people, if you know people, and get it like that.
Right.
And I think it's very important for us. Don't just look at who your customer base is and don't just look at your audience. Look at any way that you can to support Black people. So if you make a little bit of extra money and you possibly could do it into a charity, look at something that definitely impacts a lot of Black people. Mm-hmm. If you're going to buy your supplies from somewhere, buy it from Black people. If you're going to do your website, our website's coming up soon in the next 2 weeks.
Oh, that's exciting.
I have my sister's friend from high school that's still a graphic designer, and she'll be helping us through our website.
Oh, awesome.
So once again, look at that. It's Vistaprint, you guys do a great job, but like, why not support another Black person, right?
Right.
So whatever you can, every aspect of your business, support Black people. And outside of your business, support Black people. Show them how to do what you just did.
Right.
We've only been in business for 2 months, but whatever we learned, we're passing it on to everyone. Not because we're experts, but because if we've made a mistake, we want to save you some money and save you some time and some headache.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just wanted to backtrack to the flaxseed thing. Because I use flaxseed as a binder, and I always have to add water to it and like mix it up, and then I put it in the fridge, and then it thickens up. So like you're saying, the one that you got from Eritrea.
Yeah, the flaxseed is very...
It's sticky already.
Yeah, like it, you would... I still, like, when I still make the sweet potato pie crust, I still put a touch of water, right? Okay. Just like you do, and I put it back in the fridge, and it helps. But I notice, you know, with flax in general, helps things stick together.
Yeah.
I know with those, it's really nice to help things stick together. But in my head, I'm going, oh, man, this is the good stuff that I like to use for my smoothies. If I want to share with everyone, I have to get, like, bags of this. I have to get a huge amount of this. I have to start finding a supplier, right? So, yeah, Africa is, there's a lot of opportunity in Africa if you want to start a business there. But even if you didn't want to start a business there, go there, learn about it, meet people there, do business with people there. And if you can't make it to Africa, you can't afford that, there's Africans here. There's Africans everywhere on this planet. Mm. So it's important to do business with each other because the money just circulates. When we went to the last place that we were at, Plant-Based Milkshakes, another great Toronto-based company, Plant-Based Milkshakes came and bought some treats, and then I just turned around and went and bought some milkshakes. I went, look at that. The money stays here.
Mm-hmm. And you just distributed wealth between one another, and it was just, like, you know, and we enjoyed the interaction while doing it as well. So it's just a plus on both sides. We're both very happy with the transaction.
Mm. Yeah, I definitely have to check them out, Plant-Based Milkshakes.
So yummy.
Maybe I could get them on the show.
Yeah, actually, you should.
They're real nice. Yeah.
Great people. So before I went back to the flaxseed question, you ended off, Adam, by talking about how, like, the importance of sharing the knowledge you get to pass it on to other people that may be interested in having their own business. So my next question is, what are some do's and don'ts for starting and running your own business that you learned so far in the past 2 months?
Rainbow, do you want to start? And I'll add on whatever you like, or do you want me to start?
You can start.
Okay. I still want to talk too much.
But I'm learning a lot. Like, I'm just, even though I'm quiet, I'm really soaking everything you're saying. Like,
good, good.
So.
Do's and don'ts. First of all, I would say, act like you have a $1 million idea before it becomes a $1 million idea. Now I need a website, and we're rushing to get it done, as opposed to something already having been done, and then it's already on the business cards, and all those people who I've already met in the past 2 months already have our website, as opposed to now, hey everyone, some of you who follow me on Instagram, now you see my website, it's like, right? It's completely different. So start like you have a $1 million idea from the beginning, because if it does turn into it, that means you planned for it, and you planned for its growth. So act like you have a $1 million idea, number one, from the get-go. Number two, definitely watch your purchasing. The last thing that you want to do is have an apartment filled with bakery boxes and a bank account that needs an extra $200 to sign up for an event. But you have $250 worth of boxes because you over-ordered because you're like, hey, why not? I'll save on the shipping. No. Make sure you know exactly how much money you have and what you can spend at all times. And on that note, keep your day job. If you have a very toxic work environment, you can't stand it, find another day job. But keep your day job, because whatever money you're making from your business needs to be in a separate business account that doesn't get touched by anyone at any moment outside of a business purchase. The worst thing you can do is put pressure on your business in the initial stages to make money, to pay your rent, to pay your cell phone, to buy your new shoes, to do all that stuff, to go out on Saturday, and then be left with just nothing. It's best to always have a little bit of cushion, because you never know what unintended and unexpected costs could come up, no matter how much research you do. It could be something as simple as, like, your oven breaks down randomly, like, damn, I didn't know the oven was gonna break. That could cost you a couple, right? That hasn't happened to us yet,
yeah,
right? But
I'm
starting, the oven door's starting to get loose, I'm telling you. I started having that fear a couple of days ago.
Oh, shoot.
Right? Things like that. So
that's really important.
all of a sudden you heard about a festival that just came into town. Someone told you, oh, you haven't heard about that festival? Oh, it's all vegan. You're not going to go. You have to go. Oh, you find out it's $500. You're like, ooh, I have $400. I got to wait till next paycheck. But then if I do, I'm going to miss the deadline for right? Things like you always have to make sure you have a cushion. And so, yeah, act like you have a $1 million idea. Yeah, watch your purchases. Keep your day job. And in general, things that I've learned, I would like to say, make sure your concept is something worth talking about, worth bragging about. People will want to talk about it to other people because it's that fascinating and that interesting. Mm-hmm. People don't care so much about what you're doing in business. People buy into why it is you're in business far before they ever make a purchase. And so you have to keep that in mind when you're building your marketing and your concept. Because brown sugar, you could say it in two different ways. You could say, hey guys, we're Toronto's newest vegan gluten-free catering company. All ingredients made with organic coconut oil, wholesome, handmade, with love and care. We deliver and we do catering for birthday parties, corporate events, and special events. Very unmotivating, right? It's like, who cares? Like, why should I buy from you? The other way you can say it is, Brown Sugar is an educational company honoring African excellence through our delectable vegan and gluten-free desserts. Every treat named in honor of one of our heroes, we stimulate meaningful, intelligent discussion about our past whilst offering solutions for our future. A lot more motivating, right? A lot more compelling. You're ready to buy from me at this point, right?
Tell me more.
And if not, you're not ready to make a purchase. I've at least piqued your interest about the brand.
Exactly.
And so you might not make a purchase that day, but hey, you'll take a business card, you'll pass it on to a friend that's vegan, or you'll take a business card and surprise them with a vegan birthday cake. So, like I said, people care about why you're in business, not so much what you're selling. So keep that in mind when you're building your marketing and your concept. Your concept's everything. We're not big like corporations like Cinnabon. They have however many storefronts they want. They can test out a storefront here or there. Don't get me wrong, they put a lot of time and research into it. Whereas us, whatever we're doing, we don't have a bunch of extra money laying around. We have to make sure and have it well thought out, well planned, and well executed.
Right.
So before Vegan Dale even happened, we thought about the details. What is our display going to look like? How are we going to talk about our treats? How do we want to market them? So when you're a small business and you're starting, make sure you pay attention to every detail.
Do you have like a black book with all these notes in it? Or is it all in your head? Well, I'm taking notes, but... Rainbow, you were going to say?
I was also saying just making sure that your concept is something that you're passionate about.
Yes.
Because you have to, you're the one that's going to, you're the energy that's keeping it going. So if you're not happy with what you're doing, if you don't believe in what you're doing, then it's not going to take you anywhere. And that's what I love about brown sugar. It's something that I can stand behind. If it was just us baking, then...
You know how boring that gets?
You know what I mean? Like, it would just be something like, it would be like, oh, okay, yeah, we're just baking. But because we have this idea of using brown sugar as a vehicle to really, to educate our people, to bring together our people, that we can think about solutions about how to get ourselves out of the situation that we're in, it motivates us even more to keep going. It motivates us to think about more treats. It motivates us to want to have that storefront, to want to have a place where Black people can get together and feel safe and feel welcome, and to have a place of our own in this place that is telling us is not ours.
Right.
So really just having something that we love to do, and the love for our people really just motivates it and just brings it all together.
Yeah, I would love to be, you know, a brilliant scientist, lawyer, doctor, engineer, running for mayor, and things like that. But you know what? This is our way to help out. Like I said earlier, even if Saron Gebrselassie became mayor of Toronto, that wouldn't fix all the problems for Black people. Not even if she won a second term, that wouldn't fix all the problems for Black people. That she would just represent a hope and a way of us mobilizing and organizing together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing with brown sugar. If brown sugar becomes a successful company, that doesn't solve all the problems of Black people. It doesn't solve all the problems of Rainbow or Adam. But it helps Rainbow and Adam bring Black people together as a collective.
Mm-hmm.
Because once again, our psychology is telling us there's different kinds of Black people, and we can actually compartmentalize ourselves and live separately and act like what happens to that black person isn't going to happen to me or doesn't happen to me. Not true at all. So this is just our activism. This is just our way of bringing people together. And that's what I was saying. Each and every one of us, black or not, if you're a human being, you have a responsibility to give something back to this earth that you do nothing but take from all day.
Right.
Yeah.
That's so true. Well said. Anything else to add?
Using your social media platform.
Oh yeah, how do you get the word out about your business? How do you promote?
The first and foremost thing is whenever we're at a public event, do an excellent job. Mm-hmm. Have your business cards, have a smile 24/7, and let people know that we do this and that. Like, we only get a few seconds with each person. So even if they don't buy anything, we put a business card in their hand. You'll be surprised. I learned this from going door to door. You shove literature in people's hands, they just take it. You have to put it at waist level too. They taught us right at waist level. So, they take it and they look down, they read it, right?
Yeah.
So, and most people don't have the audacity to throw a business card back at you or be like, no, thank you, I don't need it. So they'll just take it. Mm-hmm. So even if they don't buy anything, guess what? Your logo is in their wallet now. Yeah. And the next time they go to pay for something, they're going to see brown sugar. Mm-hmm. And those who actually really wanted it, guess what? Now they have an option. They have a way to get in contact with you. And the best part is, you might get 100 people that take a card, maybe 5 people contact you. Those 5 people are more than enough to help you start your clientele. Mm. Everything starts small. And our clientele is still small, but it grows all the time. We get more orders. And there are weeks where we're like, hey, did people forget that we exist? Or, hey, our phone's not blowing up. What's going on? And there are other times where we're like, oh, man, I got to make that. Oh, I just want to get some extra sleep before I go to work. So it's all right. You have to have the right attitude about it, because having a business is something that is not guaranteed. Like, the marketplace doesn't care about you. It doesn't give a shit. It doesn't matter that you're struggling. It doesn't care to look after you, ask you, are you alright? Do you need some help? So you need to prevent that from happening by having an excellent plan and staying level-headed when your plan doesn't go as planned. Mm-hmm. I think there will always be hiccups. Like,
broken oven.
For instance, right? Getting a cut when you're cleaning the oven only because you spilled the coconut oil and that delayed you because the coconut oil made your whole kitchen stink, and then that delays you a few hours while that gets cleared out. And you paid for kitchen time. You're like, damn. So like things like, there's always going to be things that happen. Oh, you're about to head somewhere and then your car starts breaking down one way or another and you're like, oh, gosh, I gotta call CAA or what. Things happen. So it's important for you to react to them well. You might not believe it. We've had moments where we're arguing right before an event.
An event. Straight up into the car. Like, okay, really? We're gonna behave yourselves now. As soon as we get up, before we get out of the car, okay, behave yourselves.
So that Rainbow, like, fix your face. They're gonna see us now.
Yep.
Things happen.
You guys seem like the perfect couple. Even like when I first met you in person at the
Black Market. We fought last night. I don't mean to. I'm sorry. I'm just gonna be real here.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So
I hope everything's healed.
Like, oh no,
yeah, everything's good. Yeah.
Don't fight, that means you don't care. That means,
true. Yeah. This is bickering. Whatever. Get over it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess that's an important aspect to think about when you have partners. So
yeah, vegan deal. I remember it was the first or second day. I don't know what was the morning. And we set up half an hour. Like, we got there right at 11. We're supposed to be there at 11. This girl's panicking the whole time. Same with my older brother. And they're both being rude to me. And at one point I said, listen, guys, can you guys just calm down for a second? If we open at 11:30, we'll be just fine. No one's even walking through here yet. And I remember when she's like, you just need to be quiet, everyone. I remember thinking to myself, I'm like, all right, Adam, you have a moment right now. You could turn this, you can like escalate this fight. Oh, or you can just hold your lip and start putting out the cinnamon rolls. So there's, whether it be conflicts with people who you work with, like just broken down equipment, traffic, whatever it is, like things will happen. So you have to make sure that... You're level-headed.
Her face. You're going to call me out.
It's okay. We have to learn from your experience.
Yes, it's true. It's
What? I'm difficult sometimes too. So what's the problem?
We're business partners and life partners. Like, it's not easy. You know what I mean? Like, they tell you, like, you don't mix business and pleasure. And, like, hello, that's our entire relationship. So.
But that's why you have to put the extra work in too. Like,
mm-hmm.
a relationship itself is its own business.
Mm-hmm.
So if that business isn't running smoothly, don't start another business. Can you imagine trying to juggle two businesses?
Oh, that'd be
And
chaos.
So now that's why, like, whenever we do argue or we do have any conflict, we're like, listen, we don't have time for this, right? Like, we have something that we're trying to accomplish for the better of Black people. Put your petty differences aside because we have a bigger goal right now. We can't be wasting your time with that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess communication.
Yes.
Proper communication, clear communication between if you have a business partner.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing, right? And it's even different because it's your boyfriend or your girlfriend, if that so happens to be you. You have a different relationship with them. So you feel like you can say things to them and act a certain way and give a certain amount of sass that you would never give to someone who you just randomly hired, right? Out of the blue off Kijiji or Craigslist. So
yeah.
Make sure that you treat everyone with the same respect, no matter who you work with, because... Mm-hmm. Think about it. Have you ever had a boss and you're just like, they're so overbearing. They don't say thank you or appreciate anything. They always want you to work extra hours, but, you know, no sign of a raise or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So don't be that boss, right? I've had a million bad bosses. That's why I try to be...
not them.
Yeah. I don't have any employees yet, but I know when I do, like, I'm going to be very kind to them. I'm going to make sure that they have benefits. I'm going to make sure that they get taken care of because I know what it's like to not be taken care of, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Gotta hold your word because it's on the record.
Yeah, seriously.
Whatever. You know how strict Ontario government is? They'll come by because everybody licensed. Everyone has a food handler's license. Everyone, 24/7. So.
Yeah.
I know that you've done bake sales with your treats. Have you learned anything from that so far?
Like
along those lines?
Last weekend, I just started. I baked a whole bunch of pies, different pies.
Delicious looking pies.
Thanks. biggest thing I learned was making sure I sort of calculate how much ingredients I need to buy to make this amount of batches of pies because I ran out of vegan butter. So I'm like, oh man, I have to stop baking, clean up, go buy it from the grocery store, come back, start again.
Yeah.
They kind of like put me behind. So yeah, just making sure I have all the ingredients I need to make a certain batch.
Yeah. See, organization, same thing. We've been to like three or four like major events now, and each time we forget something.
Mm-hmm.
And Toronto traffic's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So like, oh, head back up Bathurst Street, try to, and it's terrible. So whether it's the cash box or the tent or the tarts that are in the freezer, we always forget something. So. It's important to have a checklist and be organized and never forget things because having a checklist will save anywhere from half an hour to an hour.
Mm, for sure.
And it's small things that you wouldn't think of.
Yeah, definitely having a checklist.
Things that your grade 3 teacher told you to do but you never did.
Yeah.
And now you're an adult and you're like, oh, I gotta remember how to do my checklist.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah, that's a good point. Also learning about what people like which goods do good, which of your baked goods do well, which don't.
Yeah.
So that you're not making a lot of something that people won't buy.
You're right about that. That's one thing that we realized as well. Another thing too, like you were saying, I have to know how much to buy. Yeah, it's important. You should also know like how much. It's not just enough to know your net profit. You need to know how much it costs to make each treat. How much time does it take to make however many of each number of each product? Like, you have to know your capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So that way, you don't promise a customer a certain order ahead of time and you can't make it at that moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
That way, you don't show up with a million muffins, only a few cinnamon rolls, and everybody wants cinnamon rolls, nobody wants muffins,
right?
That way, when you set the price... The customer isn't being gouged and unfairly treated, but you're also being fairly compensated for all the work and time and effort and love that you're pouring into your business.
Right.
So become obsessed with numbers. One person, an older gentleman, told me that say, become obsessed with numbers, do all the boring things, because it's the boring things that'll make your business successful.
Yeah, I definitely need to work on that aspect. Like, right now I'm still calculating how much it actually cost me to make. Mm-hmm. I'm still, like, doing that. Mm-hmm. Going through my ingredients.
Yeah, it's
like,
boring.
How much should I make?
And then you switch your... Excuse me, you switch your recipe and like, oh, I gotta redo that math now.
Yeah.
You're just like,
damn. I did switch my recipe, yeah.
Right?
Because people weren't really liking the crust of the apple crumble, so mm-hmm. I used a different crust recipe. So yeah, now I have to recalculate that.
We should definitely be in the kitchen sometime. Because I saw her, oh man, you guys should try her pies. They look so...
Even your cupcakes too, like your icing is really well done.
That was
like
my first time working with icing.
They look so colorful and like perfect swirls. I was really impressed.
Bulk Barn, they have this icing gun.
Okay.
So I just like experimented with it. I'm like, oh, cool.
Nice.
My first time. But I learned that not to do icing when the cupcakes are still warm.
Make sure
that they're cool. Because it was starting to melt. Yeah, I'm like, oh, shoot. And it was really hot in the kitchen. So that's icing.
Our cookies, too, we have to wait for the dough to cool down before we can start molding them because they will melt if they're too warm.
Yeah, the coconut oil. You know, sometimes you heat it up to make it liquid?
Yeah.
When it's hot, if you pour that in there, not only will it start to melt some of the chocolate chips, now the cookie spreads because the whole cookie's warm now.
Right.
As opposed to it being straight out the fridge and then into the oven kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I always make my cookies, put them in the fridge for 10 minutes, then pop them in the oven.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just so that, especially when you're trying to maintain that very nice Africa shape.
Yeah. Just like little tricks that you learn along the way. Like it's skills that we pick up and that we use to make our business even greater than they were. So,
We don't have a baking background. We just, like anyone, just
Either
like you.
Yeah.
You went, you saw a few recipes, you made them your own, and each time you made it, you go, alter this, change that, tweak this, and now you have a masterpiece. You have a master recipe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that concludes part one of the Mind Your Business series. If you enjoyed that interview and are interested in supporting Brown Sugar, you can follow them on their Instagram, which is @brownsugar.to. They also will be launching a website, so stay tuned for that. Thank you again for listening to this series, and also stay tuned for part two, which airs on November 23rd, where I interview Naji of Mogul Body. People who are into fitness will definitely be in for a treat. If you are enjoying this podcast, feel free to share it with your friends, family members, or with your social media followers. The support is greatly appreciated. Take care.